Hello, and welcome to Peter Pan Man Dan, a podcast about fatherhood. I'm Dan, a screenwriter and first-time father, and these are my adventures. This episode's called The Pregnancy Test, and is about that time when my wife and I finally started trying to have a kid. I was able to put off having kids for as long as I could without my beautiful wife, Meredith, divorcing my ass. It wasn't that I didn't want them. I did. Hell, even when I was a single, lonely bastard living in a one-bedroom apartment where sewage water would occasionally push its way through the building's ancient pipes and onto my kitchen floor, I knew I wanted kids. I mean, not right at that moment. I wasn't like, you know what would go well with this shit water? Some children playing in it. But I knew I wanted them once I got my plumbing issues resolved, and, oh yeah, also accomplished a small task of finding someone to have kids with me. After finding a soulmate, I'll get into how that all happened some other time, tricking her into falling in love with me and eventually marrying her, we were officially on the path towards children. And we were excited, already envisioning what our hypothetical kids would be like. Meredith's a fiery East Coaster from New Jersey. The trek from the airport to her family's home in Bergen County is literally the drive my pal Tony takes in the opening credits of The Sopranos. And I'm a slow-talking Utahn living in California who uses words like chill and dude so much that it might seem like I'm mocking surfers. So we figured our offspring would be some sort of laid-back mobsters who said dope a lot. Pretty rad if you ask me. After marriage, we decided to ease into our new life before starting to pump out kids. Enjoy the last few years of freedom, as they say. So, instead of children, we focused our energy on our adorable Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, Maple. She was our practice baby, and we treated her as such. We talked to her like she was a toddler, dress her up for Halloween, she went as a pirate last year, buy toys for her, applaud all of her bowel movements, and refer to ourselves as mommy and daddy. Hell, we'd even push her around in a doggy stroller, which is the only time during the pandemic that I was actually thankful to be wearing a mask since it hid my embarrassed face. But my wife wanted to have human babies sooner rather than later. It was me who was slowing things down, still wanting to cling to some semblance of my youth. I'd get the, should we start trying, question from Meredith every couple of months. Oh yeah, for sure, soon, but like, just not quite yet, I'd say. Okay, when is soon, she'd ask. Soon, I'd say, like I was already a dad deflecting the, are we there yet, question from rowdy kids on a road trip. But I was scared. I'm a screenwriter, a profession where nothing ever feels certain, where one little thing can cause a project to come crashing down like a Jenga tower. The lack of certainty is terrifying. I could have one year where I make a decent amount of money, followed by one where I don't make enough to afford a 20-year-old Honda Civic pulled out of the LA River. To drag a family through the muddiness of chasing your dreams felt like some form of abuse. Screenwriting requires an almost psychopathic amount of selfishness and focus. For years, writing was all I thought about, leaving very little room for anything or anyone else in my life. And even with that all-hands-on-deck concentration, I barely got a couple of things going. I figured adding a kid would prohibit me from pouring all of my attention into my writing, making it even harder to create. I read an article by Michael Chabon which basically argued that each child represents a novel you'll never publish. And well, the prospect of that scared the shit out of my selfish ass. I was left to ponder, could I be a writer and a dad? Plus, entertainment industry jobs are inherently childish, making you less mature, not more. You're basically playing make-believe in the big metaphorical sandbox that is Los Angeles, a town built by Peter Pans for Peter Pans, where you essentially pick what age you want to be and act that age for the rest of your life. Before Meredith, I was deeply rooted in my I'm never growing up Neverland ways. I danced through the endless blue skies from palm tree with other Peter Pans, worrying about no one besides myself and nothing but my writing career. Having a kid would mean I had to grow up, cease being a kid, and God forbid, put some of my self-centered focus on someone else. When Meredith came onto the scene in 2015, I learned that letting others into your life doesn't take away from it, but rather makes it much richer and fuller. I learned that only worrying about yourself sort of sucks, and that caring about others makes you human and puts a heart in your chest. So, Meredith's presence helped me inch towards transforming into a respectable adult, yanking one leg out of my Peter Pan tights while making me realize that there are other things in this life besides writing screenplays. Not surprisingly, opening my life up actually helped deepen my work and gave me new perspectives that, in turn, I think made my writing better. And best part, I no longer lived in an apartment where the kitchen sink would Old Faithful out shit water. Booyah! But in some respects, I still had one leg in the tights. I'd spend most of my days writing my make-believe stories that would probably never actually get turned into movies. I still collected Pez dispensers and basketball cards. I occasionally had beef jerky and a handful of pretzels for breakfast. And at night, I would either watch movies or an ungodly amount of NBA basketball. I felt a little like Tom Hanks' character from Big. I was just missing the trampoline and soda machine in our condo. At some point, I also got really into fantasy sports, particularly football. I wasn't even a football fan before my pal Arya asked if I wanted to join his league, but I had recently quit drinking after falling straight on my face while blackout drunk. More on that in some other episode. After spending a night at the UCLA hospital emergency room getting my nose and forehead stitched up, I deduced that my drinking habit had officially become a problem. It was time to quit. Fantasy sports seemed to fill that bottle-shaped void in my life. I got really into them, dedicating my Sundays not to God, but to the NFL. I'd sit in front of the TV in a pile of my own farts, hoping, praying that some guy I'd never meet, living in a city I'd probably never visit, would score touchdowns so I could feel superior to my 9 other friends in our silly league. Pretty darn stupid. So, I felt like once I had a kid, I'd also have to give up all the childish bullshit I'd filled my life with, or significantly reduce it. So I delayed. "How's it looking now?" asked Meredith. "Soon," I repeated for the millionth time. Finally, she put her foot down. She said that she wanted to have her first kid before she turned 30 to lower the chances of a risky pregnancy. I promised her we could make that happen. Once she turned 29, in July of 2020, I knew I only had a few more months left. "So, can we finally start trying now?" Meredith asked after her birthday. "Soon," I continued to say. "Okay, like when?" she said, realizing that if things continued trending in this direction that I'd be saying soon on my deathbed. I figured the last possible date we could start trying and keep the promise of having our first baby before she turned 30 was around September, which happens to be my birthday month. "How about we start trying on my birthday?" I suggested. "Yeah, okay, that's perfect," she said. On my big day, the pandemic was still raging, so we didn't go out to eat. Instead, Meredith ordered my favorite meal, jerk chicken enchiladas from a Jamaican restaurant in Santa Monica called Cha Cha Chicken. I savored every spiced bite of those delicious enchiladas like I was a death row prisoner about to be sent to the chair. And then, with a belly romantically full of shredded chicken and plantains, I probably said something stupid like, "Jamaican me honey," and we got to trying. So started the trying stage. I joked that the best part of having kids was trying, which instantly made me feel like a dad telling one of those dumb dad jokes. I guess it's not quite a dad joke because it implies getting laid, and most dad jokes are too innocent to suggest such lewd acts, but it's certainly dad joke adjacent. We did the best part for about a month and a half before Meredith reported that she thought she might be pregnant. Her and Maple walked down to the CVS closest to our condo to get some pregnancy tests while I was at work. I had started renting an office space about a block from our condo to get that coveted separation between work and home, something that became increasingly important after Meredith started working from home during the pandemic. So, while she was out purchasing the tests, I was pounding away at my laptop keyboard, still in Neverland, trying my best to write a screenplay so good it couldn't be ignored. I was also probably looking up fantasy football news. It was early November by now, the heart of the NFL season, where every roster move could make or break your fake season. "I grabbed some tests," Meredith texted. "Great," I texted back, showcasing my supportiveness, a model husband, really. "They were sort of expensive," she texted back. She did most of her shopping at the Goodwill and used coupons like she grew up in the Great Depression, so anything not sold at a discount seemed expensive to her. "Want me to come home and we can try one?" I texted. "Nah, I don't want to interrupt your workday," she said. "Plus, they apparently work better first thing in the morning." So the box sat on our bathroom counter all night, just waiting to change our lives. "Nothing is going to be the same after tomorrow morning, you selfish, childish bastard," the box seemed to say as I tried to sleep that night. I have to listen to old Simpsons episodes to get to sleep at night because there's something wrong with me. So I always wake up with my phone close by, a headphone bud sometimes still stuck in my ear. When I woke up that next morning, I grab my phone and check Twitter for fantasy football news, as I do every morning during the season. "Holy shit," I said. I was holy shitting because Taysom Hill of the New Orleans Saints had been awarded the starting quarterback position since Drew Brees had several broken ribs and a punctured lung. It was thought that Jameis Winston would start in his place, but Hill got the nod instead. Now, this was massive news because Taysom Hill was currently listed as a tight end and could still be slotted into your lineup as such. For those of you who don't waste your life playing fantasy football, let me explain why this was a big deal. Quarterbacks generally are the most reliable and highest scoring fantasy players. A good quarterback will score around 25 points a game for your team. Tight ends are generally the least reliable, scoring around 8 points, give or take. So, being able to slide a quarterback into the tight end position meant that you would most likely get triple point production, basically starting two quarterbacks instead of just the one that you're allotted. Nerdy shit, I know. So, when I heard the news, I raced over to my league's acquisition center to see if Taysom Hill was still available. Luckily, none of my other fantasy football friends are as big of losers as I am. So he was. I grabbed him, a move that almost ensured that I'd win my matchup that week. "You ready for this?" Meredith asked. While I was living in fantasy football land, Meredith was in the real world unboxing the pregnancy test. I was so excited about the Taysom Hill ordeal that I had almost forgotten about it. "God, these were so expensive," she added. "Yeah, too bad the Goodwill doesn't have a fertility department," I said. "I'm so nervous," said Meredith as she chugged a glass of water to make sure she had enough pee for the pregnancy stick. "Don't be nervous. Here, want me to pee on it for you?" I was in a good mood following the Taysom Hill shenanigans. "Ha, no, it doesn't work that way," she said. "Your pee is useless." "Not the first time I've heard that," I said. "Want me to hold it at least?" "Stop goofing around," she said. Meredith went into the bathroom and came back out with a giant smile on her face, holding up the stick to show off the lines indicating a positive result. "I'm pregnant," she exclaimed. "Whoa, that's amazing," I said as I pulled her in for a hug and kiss, some tears unexpectedly forming in my eyes. We had done it. She was pregnant. Since it was early November, we did the rough math and deduced that the due date, if everything went okay, would most likely be in mid-July, just before Meredith's 30th birthday. I had kept my promise. "Awesome," I said, beaming. I had gotten good news in both my fantasy world and my real world. I wasn't sure what was more amazing to me, that Taysom Hill was being allotted as a tight end, or that I was going to be a father. The whole situation was an almost perfect encapsulation of my transition from Peter Pan to man, my fantasy world passing off the baton to my reality. "Are you happy?" Meredith asked. "I'm very happy," I said. And I was. I mean, I hadn't completely wrapped my head around all the implications yet, but I was going to be a father. Meredith was going to be a mother. Plus, I was going to be getting triple point production out of the tight end position in fantasy football that week. Couldn't ask for much more. "Wow, what a day," I said. "What a day." "Think you're ready to be a dad?" Meredith asked. "Well, not yet, but I will be." "When?" she asked. "Soon," I said. This has been Peter Pan Man Dan, a Mangano Movies and Media podcast. Thanks for listening.